Well, this is always good for a Lutheran pastor to tell you. Guess what? I made a convert. That's right. Last summer, I enticed Jeannie to watch an episode of Downton Abbey. That's all it took. She was hooked, and she became a fan with me. I don't know if you've watched this PBS epic drama about the ups and downs of Lord Grantham and his family living in the splendor of the English countryside during the tumultuous early 1900s. But there's something about it. It just kind of captivates you and snarls you as you watch the struggles of these rich and beautiful, you know, people living in all the splendor and the clothes, you know, all this stuff, while really the backstory is all about the servants behind the scenes making this all possible. But you know what the downside to Downton Abbey is? They only make 7 episodes a whole year. That's right. And you have to wait 316 days, I'm telling you. 16 days, or 11 months and 7 whole days, or 45 long weeks in order to find out how the dangling kind of, you know, cliffhanger finally gets resolved. And it's tough. It's really tough, let me tell you. Unless you're fortunate enough to catch a preview of the upcoming season. And then, if you just watch that short clip somewhere, you go online and get the, you know, the spoiler, then you at least know that some of it's going to be resolved and that it's going to be a great future. Well, today I think it helps to consider the transfiguration in terms of a preview of the upcoming season, like in Downton Abbey or one of the favorite TV shows that you watch. It's as if we've come to the end of the first season called Jesus's Life, the Epiphany Year, looking at lots of episodes of his early ministry where they begin to understand what he's all about, his baptism, the temptation, the calling of his disciples, his first sermon in the synagogue. And then last week we saw him cast a vision of the kingdom in terms of Sabbath rest. But you see, we're left dangling. As we're studying this, we're left dangling because we see the downside of Jesus' high ratings and all the crowds that he has gathered. Yes, the healings, the miracles, even the resurrection of the little girl from the dead. We didn't cover that story. But it's all fabulous stuff for our first season, isn't it? Unfortunately, Jesus' high ratings also catch the attention of the religious leaders, and they begin to plot his downfall and his demise. And what's worse, Jesus comes in the sight of the arch evil villain, King Herod, who has just beheaded Jesus' cousin, his companion, and his spiritual predecessor, John the Baptist, and we're left wondering, is Jesus next? And what I love about this transfiguration is how it begins. If you're looking at it in the scripture, it says, now about 8 days after these sayings, and of course we are supposed to know that what Jesus has done is drop a proverbial bombshell right into the midst of these disciples. He's told them, oh, by the way, I'm on a trip where I'm going to get rejected, and I'm going to suffer, and I'm going to die. Good news. And then Jesus draws a proverbial line in the sand of discipleship, and he says, okay, if you want to be my disciple and follow me, here's what you got to do. You got to deny yourself. You got to take up your means of death and do it daily, and then you can follow me. So that's these sayings, and you kind of get this idea that disciples are going, what in the heck is he talking about? And then it says, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up the mountain to pray. And what is exciting to me about this is you begin to see how vulnerable Jesus is. You begin to see the real Jesus. Because I think what's really going on here is Jesus is stressed. Jesus is excited, yes, but he's worried. He's exhausted. And he's wondering whether or not he's going to last all the way. And you know, even though the Bible doesn't say it here in this gospel, you know what? I think the death of John the Baptist hit him right in the gut. I think that set him right on his backside. Someone so close to him who he loved dearly, and he gets beheaded. And Jesus can't help but wonder, oh my gosh. How is this going to end? And so what does he do? He asks his spiritual buddies, his closest friends, to go with him to what? To pray. Isn't that a great thing to do? When you're stressed, you don't do it alone. You gather your buddies and say, come on, help me, pray with me, help me. And of course, we get the significance of Jesus going up the mountain. It was the traditional place to find God. It was the closest place on earth. It was close to heaven. I mean, wasn't it Moses who went up to the Mount Sinai and he comes face to face with God? He sees God and his face is so filled with this Shekinah glory that they had to put a veil on his face. And didn't Elijah, when he was running away, you probably don't know this story, but Queen Jezebel was going to kill him. And he's exhausted, and he runs, and he goes up a mountain. And he goes to a cave, and it's there that he hears the voice of God. He meets God. And so you get the idea why Jesus is going up to meet God. He was desperate. He needed strength. And so while he's praying, and the three disciples are over there drowsing away. Isn't that kind of a preview of the Garden of Gethsemane, what's coming up? All of a sudden, let's face it, this is weird. It's like Jesus starts burning from the inside out. His face changes. His clothes become dazzling white. And the disciples catch a glimpse of the heavenly Jesus. It's like he has his feet in two places at the same time, earth and heaven. And his disciples realize, oh my goodness, there's more to this Jesus than meets the eye. And then there's Moses the lawgiver, and then Elijah the prophet. They all come, and it's like the three of them, Jesus, Moses, and Elijah, are in this sphere of light, of this all this glory of God. And time stops. And the veil between the past and the present, the dead and the alive, is suddenly thin. Now, how long this lasts, we don't know. But you see, the real thing we're supposed to notice is the topic of the conversation, which Luke says, and they were speaking of his, what? Departure, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Now, what's most interesting about this word departure is the Greek word. And so you're going to get a Greek lesson today. I'm going to pronounce the word, and then you have to tell me what it is. Okay. The way you hear it is exodos. Exodos. What is it? The Exodus, right? Jesus, or Luke uses Exodus, and here's Moses standing right there. What are you supposed to think? It's like there's a preview. The upcoming, it's not Moses this time that's going to lead the people through the Red Sea out of bondage. No, the preview is Jesus is going to do another exodus and lead people who are in bondage. And we know what kind of bondage that is. The life that clutches and grasps, the life that's greedy and self-focused, the life of anger and unforgiveness is called sin. We know it all the time. We experience it. It's worse than any leg chains would ever be. And I can't help but think that Moses encouraged Jesus at this moment. It's like, here's the language, I think, the conversation. Jesus is saying, oh man, I don't know about leading these people. I'm kind of, you know, they're kind of resisting. And Moses says, let me tell you about leading people here. Yeah, I remember, yeah, I was leading those people, those stiff-necked, hard-hearted Israelites. The Red Sea, the sea is coming down, the Egyptians are behind us, and they wouldn't go. Let me tell you, Jesus, all about leading people. Well, we can laugh at that. But I think that's what Moses did. And I think that's exactly what Elijah did. For you see, Elijah was there because it was like God's seal of approval for the exodus that Jesus was going to accomplish. For it was long held that Elijah had to come back to earth, and then the Messiah would come. And it's like God himself, by Elijah coming, saying, I approve of what you're doing. It was as if God had sent Jesus personal signs of reassurance to remember in the life and the months to come. And you see, I think this moment of mountaintop experience for Jesus, where he hears support and encouragement and endorsement, becomes this experience for him to remember and to reclaim every time he was overwhelmed and threatened and worried on his journey to the cross. I think the feeling of that cloud coming around Jesus, and then that voice that said, this is my son, my chosen, listen to him, were moments that would sustain him. When he was beaten, when he was spat upon, when he was whipped, and when the nails were pounded into his wrists, he kept on thinking, I remember, I am God's chosen one. When he prayed in the garden, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me, and yet not my will, but your will be done. And when he hung dying from the cross and screaming, my God, why have you forsaken me? He remembered. He went back. And he was sustained. And yet, I think the transfiguration was also a preview for the disciples to catch a glimpse of the heavenly Jesus, to see and experience and understand a whole concept of what glory of God would mean as they later interpreted through the eyes watching Jesus die. His lifeblood emptying out. Would they begin to understand what the Exodus was all about? Would they begin to understand and comprehend the Messiah was not about raising armies? It wasn't recruiting resistant fighters. No. Would they begin to consider what Jesus would tell them time after time after time, that the Messiah was actually called to suffer, be rejected, to die, and raise from the dead? Well, at any rate, they didn't have a whole lot of time, did they, to think about it. With the voice of God still ringing in their ears, this is my son, my chosen. Hey, folks, listen to him. They don't know what's going on. But one thing is sure. They're going to follow Jesus. We see Jesus different here. He comes down that valley He comes face to face with those evil powers that have been residing in this young boy that is demon-possessed. And I mean, bam, he goes right at it. He's kind of strong with his disciples, calling them faithless. How long am I going to put up with you? But there's no stopping him. This time we see Jesus, who's gonna win. And thus a transfiguration previews then this next episode that's going to begin Ash Wednesday, on Wednesday, as we hear Jesus sets his face to Jerusalem, and he says, there's no turning back. So, as we end, what's the big deal about the transfiguration? Why do we remember it? Well, I think sometimes we're a bit like Jesus. Walking in deep valleys of darkness and getting overwhelmed with resistance and what people are saying and problems and darkness at home, at work, or wherever we may be. And we simply need to take time out to be reassured by God. We need to have someone come alongside us. We need to hear Jesus' gentle voice saying, remember, I love you. You're my child. I'm with you. That's why at this church, one of our foundations to our vision that we learned in Focus 2020 was a sense that we need to grow. We need spiritual growth. And so we're constantly hounding you. Grow your roots deeper. That's right. So that you can stand in the light. So that you can be strong and filled with encouragement as you gather with friends and you meet Jesus in the Word. That's the why of Lent. Where we journey with Jesus and we take time out. We gather together to pray and to meditate and to simply pray. But you see, sometimes not only are we like Jesus needing a boost, we're sometimes like the disciples without a clue as to what Jesus is doing, right? We look at our lives, we look at world events, and we say, are you sure? Really? What's up with this? And you see, we need that mountaintop experience, don't we? We need to wait. We need to get a glimpse of him. We need to go back maybe in the midst of our trouble to another time we were on the mountain. Maybe it's a Christ renews his parish. Maybe it's a spiritual retreat you were on. Maybe it's a marriage encounter or sometime when you connected and saw Jesus first as your Savior. And to use that as the experience then to empower you wherever you are. To trust that no matter the chains that are holding us, we are free. He has given us salvation. So, has it been too long since you've had a mountaintop experience? Have you been living in a valley of darkness too much? Well, the good news, why don't we climb back up to the mountain together? Let's stand.